Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Friday, September 15, Chicago, Illinois. Hello again, Ori and Samuelson checking in for our weekly get-together. I'll be joined by Max Armstrong a little bit later in the broadcast, and we'll both be joined by Greg Groh of Archer Financial Services, who farms in northern Indiana, but has also been involved in the commodity market at the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange for a long, long time. Well, no active hurricanes at the moment impacting the shores of the United States, but as we look back at the impact of the hurricanes, and we'll do that in a moment, we first of all take a look at where we ended the week. It was another week of records on Wall Street. As a matter of fact, today, records by the three major indices on Wall Street, and for the first time ever, the S&P 500 closed above 2,500, helped by action in the tech stocks today. So let's take a look at those closing numbers as we ended trade on this halfway point of September. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 67 points, ending the day and the week at 22,268. The S&P 500 gained 4.5 points and ended the day a quarter of a point above 2,500. Then the NASDAQ Composite added 19 points to end the day at 64.48. Now, for the week, not bad. The S&P 500 up 1.5%, the Dow up a little more than 2%, and the NASDAQ up nearly 1.3% for the week. Tough to keep up with all of the activity in the recovery from the hurricanes, but let's take a look at some of the impact now as we're able to evaluate how much damage and where it took place and what commodities are being affected. And Greg Groh will do that a little bit later in our visit about agriculture. But as we take a look at the business world, retail sales unexpectedly fell in August, and industrial output recorded its biggest drop since 2009 as Hurricane Harvey disrupted activity, suggesting the storm could dent economic growth in the third quarter. Harvey, which lashed Texas in the last week of August, also has impacted the labor market, and Hurricane Irma, which struck Florida last weekend, also likely to hurt the economy, although analysts expect a rebound in the fourth quarter. Quoting Joel Neroth, an economist with Neroth Economic Advisors in Holland, "The early returns from Harvey are trickling in, and the news is not good. Economists are likely marking down third quarter growth and marking up the fourth quarter." The Commerce Department said retail sales dropped 0.2% last month. That's the biggest decline in 6 months. Motor vehicle sales tumbled down more than 1.5%. Sales of building materials, electronics, and appliances, as well as clothing, also fell. Now, while noting that it could not isolate the impact of Harvey on retail sales, the department said it received indications from companies that the hurricane had, quote, both positive and negative effects on their sales data, while others indicated they were not impacted at all. Although Harvey likely depressed retail sales last month, data for July and June were revised downward, suggesting a moderation in consumer spending after some brisk growth in the second quarter. Overall retail sales went up 3.2% in August on a year-on-year basis, excluding automobiles, gasoline, building materials, and food services. Retail sales fell 0.2% last month after an unrevised 0.6% increase in July. Consumer spending, which accounts for more than two-thirds of U.S. economic activity, increased at a 3.3% annualized rate in the second quarter, and that boosted GDP growth into a 3% rate in the April-June period. In a separate report today, the Federal Reserve said industrial production went down 0.9% in August, and that was the biggest drop since May of 2009. The Fed attributed about 0.75 percentage point of the decline to storm effects that, quote, temporarily curtailed drilling, servicing, and extraction activity for oil and natural gas. Then Michael Montgomery, U.S. economist at IHS Markit in Lexington, Massachusetts, said food processing is also going to join the list of the walking wounded because South Florida grows and processes a lot of food. Other data from the New York Fed today showed its index of history activity in New York State remained at rather lofty levels. So that's so far the impact of the hurricanes and the weather in the South and up along the Atlantic coast. And as we reported earlier in the week, if you are a qualified insurance claims adjuster and you're out of work or you're looking for work, get in touch with insurance companies that serve the areas that were hurt by the recent hurricane activity. Price of oil. Brent oil prices held near 5-month highs today and were back on track for the biggest weekly gain since late July. Forecasts for rising demand and the gradual restart of U.S. oil refineries. The Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC, this week forecast higher demand for its oil and also for the OPEC states who have tried to cut the activity in and drop the supply of oil. And one analyst said this boost to the market is attracting fresh speculative length, and Brent crude settled up 15 cents a day or a barrel today, $55.62. And West Texas Intermediate crude settled unchanged at $49.89 a barrel. The contract gained nearly 5% during the week, and that's its strongest in almost 2 months. So now let's look ahead to next week. And again, not much activity in corporate reports, but the Federal Reserve's Federal Open Market Committee will start its two-day meeting on interest rates on Tuesday. Separately, French President Emmanuel Macron holds news conference on the sidelines of the United Nations General Assembly in New York. Fed Reserve Chair Janet Yellen holds a news conference in Washington on Wednesday. And Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe speaks at the New York Stock Exchange in New York City. But investors next week will focus on the Federal Reserve's two-day policy meeting that begins Tuesday and the Commerce Department data on Wednesday, likely to show new home sales edging up slightly. Other data on tap next week include the Commerce Department data on current account for second quarter. And in addition to that, we will get a report from Adobe Systems, expecting to show an increase in its third quarter revenue on Tuesday, as the demand for its Creative Cloud business, which includes Photoshop, Illustrator, and InDesign, continues to grow. And then, of course, there's the Apple story this week. Apple unveiled three new phones, an advanced watch that can take calls, and a new Apple TV. But it didn't get the response that Apple thought it would. Diehard fans not able to get their hands on the iPhone X until November 3rd. The iPhone 8 and the iPhone 8 Plus will go on sale beginning Friday. But disappointment in the price of the iPhone X, $999, and apparently a backup in delivery. Package delivery company FedEx will post first quarter results after the market closes on Tuesday. And investors will be watching for commentary on the exact financial impact of the cyber attack on FedEx's Dutch unit TNT Express in late June. Again, on the speaking circuit, a lot of regional presidents of the Federal Reserve, and they'll be anywhere from Oklahoma City. They'll be talking in Zurich, Switzerland, and we'll be talking in Kansas City. So a lot of appearances by the Fed coming up next week. But again, on Wednesday, that press conference that will be held by the chair of the Federal Reserve Board will be watched carefully for further clues, because it's now looking like the chance of an interest rate hike before the end of the year may be falling into more deciding it won't happen. So we'll have to take a look at that. Stay with us here on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need, today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Greg Groh, Archer Financial Services, joins us to talk markets. And since we've just come out of a September crop report, any surprises there for you?
Well, it was a big surprise that the yield actually went up from the August report, when most people thought the August report was a little bit of a strange thing. So I think people are shaking their heads a little bit. Those of us that are on the ground looking at things are having a hard time justifying the type of yields that were presented. And when you look at the weather maps, you look at the late season dryness that came from mid-August through early September, it's hard to believe that we're going to match those expectations that the USDA has set.
And as far as maturity on the corn crop, it's slower than normal, isn't it?
It's behind a couple weeks in most cases. But luckily, fortunately, we haven't had an early end to the growing season, and it doesn't look like that. It looks like a warming trend right now for mid-month into the latter part of the month. So it looks like we'll be able to finish the crop, but I don't think we had the moisture that we would have liked to have seen in many cases.
I looked over the numbers of soybean exports to China from the 1st of August till the present. They have been very active in the bean market.
They've been very active. Maybe they're sensing that the crop isn't what the USDA says it is. The weakness, the two-year lows recently in the dollar have helped keeping us very competitive in the marketplace, and we've seen bean and corn sales both strong here to start the season.
From early in the season right on through, we're watching those crop updates every Monday afternoon come out, showing us the crop progress, and you look at the condition ratings, and you guys in the trade hang on them. But there's this disconnect anymore. What's the deal here? Will you watch them as closely next year?
Well, it's the one gauge we have. It's the one thing we have to talk about, you know, after Monday night when these reports are released. But we're now looking at it and going, can we really use this data to help us come up with yield potentials? And that's a big question right now. And if the overall yield stays as high as the USA projects when harvest actually gets underway here later this month and next, we're going to have to rethink those measures, and perhaps it's the technology gains that we've had in the last 10 to 15 years that are helping move that needle.
A month from now, we'll know a lot more, won't we?
We sure will.
We'll be watching those yield monitor reports and the social media tweets out there coming in from the field. What's your gut feeling on what we'll see when the combine start rolling?
Well, I think the yields are going to come in a little bit below what the USDA is saying. It's a good crop. Yields so far coming out of the south and into the southeast have been good. They've been at or above expectations in those areas. But my feeling is as we get up into the heart of the main production areas, we're not going to find yield meeting or exceeding expectations, and certainly nothing close to last year from what I can tell.
We watched closely those hurricanes, and there were instances, as we saw in photographs in the social media, where farms were hit hard. But generally speaking, the impact was not substantial.
I don't think so. I mean, if that hurricane last week had gone up the east coast of Florida, impacted the Carolinas, it could have been a different story for them. But fortunately, it came up and kind of died out there in Georgia and certainly impacted some people in that region. But the rainfall amounts just weren't, you know, as huge as what had been projected.
When we get into the harvest, we still have some of this old crop corn sitting around out there. Will there be some bottlenecks in a few spots?
I think that we saw a lot of old crop corn finally move out of farmers' hands right at the end of August, just before Labor Day weekend. So with industrial demand staying pretty good, export demand staying pretty good, I think a lot of the last year's corn is going to move into the pipeline. I think it won't be quite the problem maybe that some have been talking about. We've added a lot of storage in the last 10 to 15 years across the country, and you know, I think that we'll have enough places to put it. But old crop corn certainly weighed on the market as we went into the latter part of the summer.
What's your gut feeling about the weeks ahead in terms of market prices? Could we see a little bit of a bump during harvest given the price levels we have now?
I think it's going to be tough to mount any sustained rallies. We could have some technical rallies. If the yield would happen to come in at or below some of the thinking, I mean, if we saw the USDA dropped things in October substantially, you could see a little pickup in price. But, you know, it's going to be tough. The $3.90 to $4 range in this year's corn, March corn, up in that range is going to meet a lot of resistance. And there's just a lot of corn around in the world with Brazil's big crop last year. So I think we don't want to see our price get too high in the global stage, or we'll start to lose some of that business. And our market share has already been falling. We're expecting around a 30% market share in the global corn trade this year. Certainly don't want to see it below that. So we want to keep prices competitive to keep this product moving.
Back to the hurricane impact for a moment. Will that add to imports from South America coming into the southeastern part of the country?
Haven't seen much about that. I don't think that it's going to be an issue in a big way this year as it has been in the past, just because we have had the price stay subdued. I imagine there will be some imports into the Delmira Peninsula area into
right.
Wilmington. But beyond that, I don't think it's going to be a big factor this year.
And the livestock picture, are we going to get out of this up and down roller coaster on cattle?
It's been quite a market to try and analyze. I have had a hard time coming up with, you know, ways to explain the volatility that we see at times. I think as far as this market right now, we have a fairly large supply of cattle to work through here in the fourth quarter. But it's possible that the market's trying to sense a bit of a low. We'll have to watch and see how demand rebounds in the restaurant trade after the hurricanes that we've been through. Hopefully we don't have any more of those types of experiences. And we'll set some type of a fall low and advance into the spring. Cattle supplies, though, going into the first quarter of next year look to be to stage a pretty good drop. So I'm optimistic going into the first quarter of next year.
But we look at ample supplies of pork, poultry, and beef right now.
It's hard to mount any kind of a sustained rally. Last spring, we had a very strong rally in cattle that exceeded a lot of expectations. I doubt if we repeat that this year.
We thank you very much for sharing your expertise with us. A visit with Greg Groh of Archer Financial Services.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
The trade picture in the world continues to be a difficult one as we continue to try to figure out what parts of NAFTA we can keep and agree on between Canada, the United States, and Mexico. And then, of course, there's the concern over what could happen to all of the NAFTA rules that are currently in place. Now, there is some very heavy lobbying going on. the trade ministers from Canada and Mexico making many visits to the United States to discuss areas of agreement and to make known the agricultural trade is vital. For example, this week, the government of Canada sent the trade minister McCauley to New Orleans, Louisiana, where he addressed the U.S. National Association of State Departments of Agriculture, NASDA, the annual meeting. And during his address, Minister McCauley highlighted the more than $62 billion in agricultural and agri-food products that crossed the Canadian-U.S. border in 2016. The minister also emphasized that 29 states in the United States count Canada as their top agriculture and agri-food export market. And while he was in New Orleans, Minister McCauley met with State Secretary of Agriculture Bill Northey of Iowa and State Commissioners of Agriculture from Louisiana, from Connecticut. He also toured the Canadian National Railway facilities at the Port of New Orleans, met with the Mayor of New Orleans, Mitch Landrieu, and discussed opportunities for agricultural trade with the local industry representatives. Quoting some of what he said, "Canada and the United States benefit from a strong, integrated, and balanced agricultural trading partnership that delivers high-quality foods and supports millions of middle-class jobs on both sides of our border. North American agricultural trade has quadrupled since the mid-1990s, and he went on to say, "We are working closely with representatives at all levels of the U.S. government to ensure that our agriculture and agri-food sectors continue to prosper." Then he made some further points. Canada and the U.S. are each other's largest trade partners for agriculture and agri-food. Canada is the top agriculture and agri-food export market for 29 U.S. states. Canada-U.S. trade supports millions of middle-class jobs on both sides of the border. Canada-United States bilateral agricultural and agri-food trade is an exceptionally large industry for North America. He went on to share a lot of other statistics on why it's important that we not do anything to reduce the trade or to limit the trade between the three countries. Also, government officials from Mexico traveling to the United States to make very similar points on behalf of Mexico. Taking a look at the impact of current prices, some people are saying, what will that do to farm planning for the next crop in Brazil? That's right now approaching planting season. Preparation for the next soy and corn crops fell behind schedule in the run-up for planting in Brazil as the prospect of squeezed margins amid low grain prices affected planting decisions, according to analysts and farmers. And factors hampering planting and planning also include exchange rate volatility that affects fertilizer purchases, and they're concerned about excess bureaucracy for accessing the rural credit lines. There's a farmer, Eduardo Godoy, who plants 3,400 hectares of soybeans in Mato Grosso State, said he prefers to buy inputs in advance, but this year he postponed those purchases due to next crop's potentially lower margins. He said one is afraid of incurring costs without a guaranteed income. Well, that's a long story. Forward sales for the next harvest are advancing timidly, and soybean planting in Mato Grosso should start in the next few weeks, rains permitting, while the new summer corn has begun in Brazil's south. And yet, until September 8th, farmers had planted only 4% of the summer corn in the south, half of last season at this same time. Lower grain prices have also affected the fertilizer market in Brazil, and now farmers need more grains to exchange for the same quantity of soil nutrient products. So it'll be interesting to watch as the planting begins in South America, and we'll continue to watch producers' plans there that are impacted by the prices. Now, looking at this week's trade in the grain market here in the U.S., soybean futures fell today, profit-taking, but the benchmark Board of Trade November contract still recorded a fourth straight weekly advance, supported by firm cash markets and by export demand. I took a look at the exports going to China from the 1st of August, and China has been extremely active in the soybean market, and of course they are the biggest buyer of U.S. soybeans, and as late as today, we sold 132,000 tons of soybeans to China, the latest in a string of U.S. soybean sales announced throughout the week. And cash values for soybeans continued to firm at the Gulf, supported by exporters seeking soybeans for September loadings. Corn ended modestly higher today on technology buying, including some short covering, but rallies were capped by expectations of expanding harvest progress in the Midwest in the coming days. One analyst said drier weather in the eastern Midwest and Delta will favor corn and soybean dry down and early harvesting. Wheat futures firmed on technical buying and fears of dry weather hurting production prospects in Australia. The Australian government this week cut its estimate of the country's 2017-18 wheat harvest to 21.6 million tons, and that would be an eight-year low. And one analyst said, it's too dry in Australia and too wet in Argentina. The commodity funds are short. The market has shown some measure of rebound here. And having said that, we traded from $4.48 to $4.50 a bushel three times. Can't generate anything else. Turning to livestock trade, in a visit with Greg Groh of Archer Financial Services, you heard him talk about the cattle market being probably the toughest market to analyze right now, and he gets asked a great deal about the cattle market. It has been a roller coaster ride for months, up and down, and as Greg properly said, how do you analyze a market like that? Well, it's pretty tough to do that, and he did say that maybe we'll get a little bounce back in cattle prices come early 2018. So where do we start on Monday when the markets begin trading again? Well, let's see where they closed for the day on the price level. The October lean hog contract will start trade on Monday at $60.97 after gaining $2.05 a hundredweight today. The October live cattle contract gained a penny today, and so it will start, or I should say gained a dollar today, so it'll start Monday at $107.75. And the October feeder cattle contract gained $1.12 a hundredweight today, so Monday it will start trading at $150.65 a hundredweight. As far as the farm shows, the outdoor agricultural shows, I have to comment, I cannot remember a year when we have had absolutely perfect weather for state and county fairs over much of the nation, particularly in the Midwest. Can't say that, of course, for the Gulf and the Atlantic coast, but I fly around the country a good deal in a Cessna 210, and we're always concerned about flying into thunderstorms or rain or that activity. Every trip I had scheduled, from going to the Farm Progress Show, to the Illinois State Fair, to the Half Century of Progress Show, to the University of Illinois, and on and on and on, didn't have to worry one moment about a thunderstorm or a rainstorm. Unbelievably ideal weather for the outdoor activity. Well, that's our time for this week. As always, we appreciate your spending time with us, and our thanks to the folks at the CME Group. They bring you The Markets, sponsored by CME Group.